House Bill 259, Safety of Religious Institutions, will allow a religious institution to authorize a person or persons with a concealed carry license to carry a firearm on property owned, rented, leased, or used by the church, synagogue, or religious institution. Right now, if a church is located on the same property where there is a school, a permit holder is prohibited from carrying at church, even if the religious institution had a pre-K that met Monday through Friday. When somebody just showed up to church on Sunday, they would be inadvertently breaking the law as a concealed weapons holder. Honestly, I consider this more of a glitch bill, and while it will always be painted as a gun bill, this is a private property rights issue, and that is the bill.
Yeah, when J.R. Williamson, District 3 representative, that's Santa Rosa County, when he proposed this bill, third reading on Friday, had the big debate in the House session. It's a glitch bill in the sense that this was an unintended consequence of the banning of guns in schools, that you would then also wind up banning guns in churches that are near schools or on properties of schools or in school buildings, or a church that happens to have a school attached to it would therefore become invalidated as a place where you could have it. Those are kind of all the conditions, right? And he says it's a glitch bill because it's fixing that glitch that was never intended. And again, you have Democrats raising all kinds of opposition to this bill. Look, the short version is that typically Republicans are going to favor anything that opens up gun rights and gun freedom, and Democrats are typically going to favor anything that creates gun restrictions or, you know, gun legislation or gun control. Typically. Not every time, but typically. This one, well, same thing. You've got Andrew Learned, who says, I carried an M4 and a 9mm when I was in the military, and, you know, we should never, ever have these in the classrooms.
And I've carried an M4 rifle in combat. I've fired an M4 rifle. I used to carry a 9mm pistol, and I've seen what these weapons can do, which is, and I have 8-year-old twins. And this is why I am so dead set against putting guns in kids' classrooms. But if we're drawing the line, and if the stated purpose of this is to put guns in classrooms, I'm a hard no, and I always will be.
But it's not the stated purpose of this bill, nor is it even a byproduct of this bill. What this bill does is it allows churches and the people who own the property in which a church meets to decide whether to allow guns in onto that property. Because, you know, private property owners get to decide, right? And so if it's private property, then you get to make the choice. And schools are prohibited already. There's nothing about this bill that really changes that. But, okay, fine. And then you get Joe Geller. Joe Geller is one of these, what's the word I want? If you think like national politics, like somebody who used to be like a Barney Frank, or I'm not quite a Bernie Sanders, not quite fair. But, you know, just somebody who's like that angry old crotchety liberal who's always going to be against everything and is kind of like the elder spokesman for the liberal side. That's Joe Geller, okay? At least that's my picture of him whenever I hear him talk. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of, he's always plays that role.
Of all the people that get a say, the church elders, the temple elders, the mosque elders, of everyone who gets a say in this, you know who doesn't get a say? The kids. The kids don't get a say. They have nothing to say about it. And our job ought to be to protect them.
That is an amazingly oblivious comment. Because, number one, that's right, the kids don't get a say. I mean, that's the nature of being a kid. The adults make the decisions. So it's a false argument to be as a complete red herring. The kids don't get a say. The second one, remember, did you hear the very end of it?
And our job ought to be to protect them.
Exactly. That is exactly what Republicans are trying to do. We have very different notions of how to accomplish that. But we exactly want to be able to protect kids. Particularly, for example, kids who are in their Sunday school classes at a church need protection. How do you protect them? Well, you can't right now because nobody can have the weapon, you know, right? That's it, unless you're going to, what, maybe if you hire an SRO or something on the weekend, maybe. So the whole point of the bill is exactly to expand protection, even for children at church. So Cord Byrd, one of the representatives co-sponsoring this bill with Representative Williamson.
Members, this bill recognizes the special place in history that our religious institutions have, both legal and historical. It prohibits making accidental criminals out of law-abiding citizens. And in an increasingly secular society that is hostile to to religious freedom and people of faith. It allows those religious institutions that want to have the opportunity to protect themselves, it grants them that ability.
Absolutely. Just, I mean, look, you have a hostility to religion these days. You have attacks on church campuses and again and again. This just helps close, as Jared calls it, a glitch in the system that prohibits certain churches from having the same rights that every other church has. And as he says in the close,
members, it's not often that you're going to get a chance to walk into this chamber and expand something that is a foundation of our country, and that is private property rights. It's not often you're going to walk into this chamber and do something that supports the First Amendment right for the constituents that you represent. It's not often that you're going to walk into this chamber and you're going to be able to protect the Second Amendment for the people that you represent. With one push of a button today, you're going to be able to do all three.
You get to expand gun rights or protect them. You get to expand First Amendment, religion, and freedom of assembly rights in church or protect them. And you get to expand private property rights by making sure that private property owners have the freedom to decide yay or nay on whether somebody, say, for example, subleasing their property for a church gets to use a gun or not. And it's all three. Now, there's a bit of a tension between him opening and saying this is just a glitch bill and closing with you get to protect three fundamental constitutional rights. But they're both true. It is a glitch bill because it's fixing a glitch, and in the process of fixing the glitch, it advances all three of those. So what was the vote?
The question now recurs on final passage of CS for CS, House Bill 259. The clerk will unlock the machine, and the members will proceed to vote. The clerk will lock the machine and announce the vote.
76 yeas, 37 nays, Mr. Speaker.
Now, before you get too excited, it's got to get through the Senate, although it's got through, I think, one or two committees so far in the Senate. So we'll see how this shakes out in the end. You know, it has to pass both and then get signed by the governor. The governor would 100% sign this if it gets through the Senate. And unfortunately, historically, the Senate has been the hang-up on Second Amendment issues, as we know, since Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. 6:16 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. Davis Allen has traffic on the fives.
Well, Andrew, we have an accident on Avalon Boulevard northbound. This is just south of I-10, so right when you get to the Waffle House Red Roof Inn area, this is where this accident's located and is backing up delays around the area before you get to the RV park. So just expect a few minutes extra on your route. Use caution over there. I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly, and we are seeing some minor delays at the front gate of Aeneas Pensacola. Nothing too delayed at the moment. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
All right. When you hear me talking about NSEC, you hear me saying end of March, end of March, end of March for that beautiful lawn. Well, guess what? It's the end of March, right? Now is the time. If you want to have that beautiful lawn in July, you got to be thinking about it right now, because now is the time for fertilizer. The lawn needs that food to transition from dormancy to growing green. And you know, it looks dormant now, but that's the whole point, is to get it up and going. Crabgrass, you know, pre-emergent, right? Get that on there early and stop it from growing. It's the same thing. You got to think ahead. On the lawn, everything is thinking ahead. So with NSEC, if you sign up today, you get your first lawn application free with any new annual lawn program that includes the initial soil sample, lime treatment on an average size yard, and you got to be thinking about these things in advance. Their program is timed, it's scheduled to get your lawn what it needs, when it needs it, guaranteed. Locally owned and operated all along the Gulf Coast. NSEC, ENSEC.net. Here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Mark Jacobs is back from his week of sun and fun. Or just back on the air anyway.
No, it was newsroom. A great week.
Good, good. You guys left town and went away, right?
Yes, in Savannah. Spent a week in Savannah. What a beautiful, charming little
city. Didn't get hit by any storms while you were there, did you?
It rained on Sunday.
Okay.
But the rest of the time was great.
Good, good. Great. Well, welcome back. Good to have you. What's going on in the newsroom this morning?
Former CDC Director Dr. Robert Redfield believes COVID-19 originated in a lab in China. He tells CNN the most likely scenario is the virus escaping from the lab in Wuhan and spreading from there. Again, he says that's just his opinion.
And Fauci yesterday was like, eh.
I've heard of a lot of other people going, eh.
I mean, he's kind of the only one, but they're still doing that research, right? The mm-hmm. team is still right. there trying to do right. the excavation of what actually happened.
City of Nashville under a state of emergency after flooding there left at least four people dead over the weekend. Mayor John Cooper saying he's asking for state and federal assistance.
Nashville received more than 7 inches of rain over the past 48 hours. Now, that is the second highest two-day rainfall total in our history.
Nashville first responders rescued at least 130 people from vehicles and homes as the waters rose.
Now, it's a very serious story, but can I tell you what I heard when I heard you play that clip?
Okay.
Al Gore. Now, Tennessee, I get it, but play it again and tell me you don't hear Al Gore.
Let's see here.
Nashville received more than 7 inches of rain over the past 48 hours.
I can hear that.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah, like a young Al Gore before he really slowed down.
Lived in Tennessee for 15 years.
Right?
Yeah, I can hear it there. The stern of that massive container ship that's blocking the Suez Canal has now been freed. The Ever Given, lodged across one of the world's most important shipping arteries for nearly a week, costing, I think, I've heard about $10 billion a day. Still unclear, though, how long it's going to be there, when it can be moved, or when other ships can start using the waterway again.
Well, I saw they had gotten it moved like a couple hundred feet, maybe. They've got
partially refloated.
The propeller has gotten freed, or the rudder has gotten freed.
They got the stern.
Yeah, and they're thinking they probably get it out today, but man, oh, goodness. Yeah, it's
Question remains, how'd you get crosswise like that in the Suez Canal?
I love the headline. I saw a headline that said, experts think human error involved. As opposed to what? Like machine error? I mean, what do you think was the alternative there?
Divine intervention?
Exactly. Most useless explanation ever. All right, Mark, thanks so much for the update. 622 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. So we went to the beach for the first time. Living in Pensacola, went to the beach for the first time since pre-Sally. I had never, actually until about 2 months ago, I hadn't even been across I-10 since the, even to Avalon, and then had a couple of events for Leadership Santa Rosa's, another event, something or other. I was over there for, I don't remember what now. Oh, my son had a thing with a group. And so I had gradually seen a little bit more. And then we had been biking down in the Tiger Point, Midway area. And so I'd gone over there two weekends in a row. And well, we had relatives in town, and so we went to the beach this weekend. All kinds of stuff to report to you. Some of which we already knew, some of which we didn't know. One thing that we didn't know. The signs on last week sometimes somebody suggested, hey, you should send all the representatives a note and tell them to cover up the signs that say toll, because the out of towners are like stupid. And you know, I mean, we love you. We're glad you're here. But they don't know what to do at the toll plaza when there's no toll being collected. So cover up the toll sign and then just people won't stop at the toll plaza as much on Avalon. Well, somebody did get out there and cover it up. Now, it doesn't look super official. Because it looks like, you know, a couple of your relatives got a couple of plastic bags and some duct tape and did it in the middle of the night. But most of the signs that say toll have been covered over on Avalon Boulevard. Second thing, the right turn lane going southbound on Avalon, turning right onto westbound 98, going toward the Naval Live Oaks. FDOT is expanding that. It's under construction, like, now. So that's going to be expanded back, which is good because people, I mean, you can see the tire trucks, tire tread where a lot of people have been trying way back, but they're going to be expanding that significantly. You think, why did it take 6 months? Don't ask me this. I don't know. It's like people keep asking me, when's the bridge going to be done? When you're driving on it. That's when it's going to be done. It's going to be done when, well, they say Memorial Day. I know. Which other things that they've said were right, okay? But, you know, they're expanding that, so that's good news. Another thing is we got a chance to actually drive through Gulf Breeze, and I knew it was bad. I mean, I knew from talking to people, but we hadn't been. And until you see it for yourself, it's bad. Like, I put a video up on our Facebook page. If you want to see it, we took a drive through night. You could stand in the middle of 98, and you'd never get hit by a car for hours. There might be some, but it's empty. And the McDonald's is closed with a sign that says, you know, we'll be open when the bridge is open. The Taco Bell's gone. All kinds of other businesses have gone out. It's a ghost town, and it's creepy. If you're used to Gulf Breeze being, and we were 5 o'clock on a Saturday on a beach day, and there was, you know, I saw a car kind of thing. So it's really bad. Other news notes. The bike lanes on Bob Sykes Bridge are done. There's a bike lane and a pedestrian area, and it's separated from the two main lanes, which they've narrowed by those little reflector kind of pylons, the white ones with the green on them. They're kind of weird looking, but they're white with green. Both directions, there's a dedicated bike and pedestrian lane both. There's an extended turn lane going on to Fort Pickens Road that I knew was in development, but I didn't know was done. The they're building the access road over there between Grand Marlin and Hemingway's on the east side of 399. What else did I see? The the sailfish sign. Oh, good Lord. Oh, I mean, just turn it off. just turn it off. It's better to have it just off. Because as far as I could tell, and I didn't stick around to, like, watch it, and it was barely dusk, so, I mean, you know, but I'm pretty sure what I saw is what it does. On the backside, you know how there's just the sailfish and then, you know, Pensacola Beach or whatever? All that's there is the CO from Pensacola, I think, is what was remaining. It was only two letters in red. And on the front side, the little turn right in blue in the middle of the top that's real small, and then, like, six of the white lights on the outside, that's all that turned on. I mean, this is, and just turn it off. Turn it off. Get a replacement when you can, but it's bad. 626 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Now, I know the county, this is Escambia County owns that project, and they are trying to fix it. But, yeah, it's, anyway, 437-1620, 437-1620. Davis Allen has traffic for you.
You mentioned Hemingway's. I don't know. Did you mention that Hemingway's is actually going to be something different now?
No.
Yeah, Hemingway's is going to be no more. They are no more.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember what it's going to be, but it is going to be something else.
By the way, the ferry dock out at Mon Beach is supposed to be done. Robert Bender said it was done. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, good deal. But yeah, that's a note. And a text just came in reminding us of that. So yeah, cool. Yeah, Hemingway's is going to be something else now. Anyways, if you're actually leaving Gulf Breeze and you're heading towards I-10, there's a minor accident right around the Waffle House Red Roof Inn. It's not showing too significant of delays. Backed up around the area of the Avalon Landing RV Park. If you're going across the northern span of Garcon Point Bridge, looking just a little slow until you get across the hump, and then also the front gate of NES Pensacola, not really many delays to report. About halfway on the bridge is where I'm seeing the delays there. I-10, I-110 checking and clear along with 9 Mile Road, Pine Forest Road, and Mobile Highway all the way through Scenic Highway, all flowing smoothly. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
I go to the bar, I read my coat, I call a bartender, so look man, come down here.
Can I just tell you how much I love you guys? You are such a resourceful, knowledgeable, engaged audience. Seriously. We were just talking about Hemingway's out on the beach being closed and changing over. No sooner had Davis mentioned that than 1, 2, 3, I think, different texts came in. Hemingway is going to be Felix's. It's Felix's Causeway to Mobile. It's going to be Felix's. I love it. Guys know so much. It's great. So that's going to it's gonna be different. Oh, and I had forgotten about the right turn. That there's no stopping on the right turn going north on 399 off the beach onto Highway 98. Because I didn't go that way. I went left and went over the overpass to see Gulf Breeze proper and then missed it coming back east. But yeah, no, good note also on that, that's been another change. And those, the exit from the parking lot on Pensacola Beach is all crazy now, but I'm sure it's better. But with all those white pylons and everything. Anyway, Mark, what do you got coming up, sir?
We'll hear from the grocery store owner involved in that weekend standoff after 5.
News. I'm Lillian Wu. 10 months after death of George Floyd, opening statements set to start in the trial of the former Minneapolis officer who knelt on his neck for 9 minutes. Derek Chauvin is charged with second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. He's the first Minneapolis officer to be tried for murder in the on-duty killing of a black person. Security's tight with checkpoints and barriers around the Hennepin County Government Center, where the trial is expected to last several weeks. Three other former Minneapolis officers will face trial later this summer. And a breakthrough in the Suez Canal, where a huge container ship blocking the waterways began to budge 6 days after it became stuck. The waterways managers say the Ever Given has been partially refloated. America's listening to Fox News.
Because you listen to Dave Ramsey, 1 till 4 p.m. weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
HB1 will have the same effect of chilling the very conduct that has made America great. It will have the effect of chilling the conduct that made us stand up to the promise that every person shall be equal under our Constitution. Because it's through protests that we are reminded of the obligations that we have to one another.
This is Representative Chris Benjamin, a Democrat, talking about HB 1, the anti-riot legislation that passed the full House on Friday and is still waiting for a Senate to happen. But I agree with his concern, and I certainly agree with him, that protest is an essential, fundamental American activity protected by the Constitution. And if I thought this legislation would chill significantly or impede ordinary peaceful protest, I too would oppose it. I agree with him in spirit. And this is why I love the Florida House, because you get, you know, the different perspectives represented, sometimes ridiculously, sometimes genuinely. And I appreciate that comment by Representative Benjamin. Joining us now, we have Alex Andrade. He is our representative from District 2, the southern half of Escambia County, plus Gulf Breeze, plus the beach. Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. I also agree that protests are a fundamental right.
So take us through this bill for just a second, because you became, if I'm not mistaken, an additional co-sponsor on the bill before it passed the House. What will this bill actually do for the people that are worried about the effect it might have on peaceful protest?
So the bill largely addresses a lot of the tactics that we saw groups like Antifa used last year to make protests devolve into the violence and the rioting that we saw all last summer. Right. One of them is they would go bail people out after somebody who was committing crimes was arrested at the protest. They'd go bail them out so that they could go straight back to rioting. It clarifies that if you are, you know, surrounding people at restaurants, trying to scream at them to force them to say something, that's mob intimidation. It addresses a lot of the more heinous activities that we saw last year. People surrounding vehicles, breaking vehicles, damaging property. It just clarifies exactly what is and is not a riot. It's also important to note that we have not had a statutorily defined scope of what a riot is for decades. It's been a common law definition that's been very vague. This bill actually specifically defined what a riot is, so that if it passes in the Senate and gets signed by the governor, we for the first time have a statutorily defined definition of riot.
Is it going to pass the Senate? Because, you know, some of these bills we get all excited about, they got through the House. This one has not gotten very far. I mean, what's going to happen in the Senate? I know you don't speak for them, but you can assess it.
There's still a chance that it would pass, that it could make it to the Senate floor. However, the Senate's criminal justice committee chairman, Senator Pizzo, out of Miami, he's a Democrat. He held his final criminal justice subcommittee meeting, and it was not on the agenda. Since it's not been heard in its first committee, it won't move the Senate companion to HB1, won't move through the Senate committee process the same way HB1 made it through the House committee process. So if it's going to pass in the Senate, there's going to have to be some procedural rules that are pursued so that it can bypass the criminal justice subcommittee.
And why do we have 3/4 of the Senate? Well, not quite 3/4, but 2/3 of the Senate is Republicans. But we got a Democrat chair of a committee. That doesn't make any sense to me. But I'm.
Well, we don't have quite 2/3 control in the Senate. So we're not quite there yet. We're close, but not a super majority in the Senate.
But even with the majority, how do the Democrats chair committees when they don't have a majority? Or even a tie,
because it's so much closer to being even in the Senate. There's just more leeway given.
Okay, all right. I'll be honest. A lot of times, the way the Senate works, it's a little bit opaque to me. So I appreciate the clarification. We'll see. Obviously, with that one. Meanwhile, as you well know, another bill that passed on Friday out of the General House, J.R. Williamson's bill and Representative Byrd's bill on allowing guns in churches that happen to be on, near, or in school campuses. As he calls it, a glitch bill. This one seems to be have more hope in the Senate, although gun bills in the Senate recently have been, you know, they never seem to quite get there. What's your assessment on the Senate side here?
Well, the companion bill has been moving in the Senate, so I think it's got a very good chance. And it's important to note that this even applies to churches, independent churches that have you know, daycares throughout the week on their property. You know, this far churches like that, even from having any kind of voluntary security team with concealed weapons on their property. So allowing churches the right to defend themselves again if they wanted to is something that it didn't even get very much debate in the House when it passed this week. I think everybody, you know, understood exactly where we were coming from, and Jerry Williamson did a great job advocating for it.
Yeah, I was really surprised, honestly, because I had the whole five-hour session teed up to listen to all the debates, and they got through this. You guys got through this one in like a half hour. I thought, oh, that was easy. No big deal. And as you say, you know, one of the key things about this bill to me is it doesn't force any church to have guns that doesn't want to have guns, right? I mean, that's the simple version, is this gives choice to people who operate churches, right? Or synagogues or whatever.
Yeah, no, exactly. Exactly. If your church wants a policy that there are no weapons allowed, you can still have that policy.
Hey, the last bill I wanted to ask you about, we're talking to Alex Andrade, he's our state representative for District 2, was the COVID shield bill. This has been a big process to get this through, and the details kind of matter here, but is this one going, is this going to the governor? Where is the status of this one? Does it still wait for the Senate to figure this out?
Well, no, actually, the bill that we took up last week, Thursday and Friday, was SB 72.
Okay.
I believe was the number. And it was the Senate version that also included coverage for healthcare businesses. So the House's initial bill only covered non-healthcare entities. The Senate bundled the two bills together, coverage for non-healthcare and for healthcare entities, and sent that bill back to us for passage again. We'd already passed Lawrence McClure's non-healthcare businesses COVID liability bill a few weeks prior, and this was, you know, our time to take up the Senate's version and pass it. So we passed it, and then we also certified it back so it can get passed by the governor sooner rather than later.
So this bill would provide for businesses, nursing homes, hospitals, as long as they can basically show that they've taken reasonable precautions to not be subject to COVID lawsuits. They would basically have to prove a higher standard of negligence, so that would give them some shelter from what we would think of as frivolous or unnecessary law. Is that basically the end result here?
Basically. I mean, if you remember, the CDC was giving out, different guidance. It felt like almost every single week,
yeah.
You know, wear masks, don't wear masks. It was such a moving target last year that the most well-intentioned businesses who were just trying to make ends meet, they shouldn't have to live in fear of, you know, some type of liability that they really couldn't be, held liable for. We just wanted to make sure that businesses in Florida who've been working their tails off to keep their employees and their customers safe aren't living in fear for the next few years, from potentially frivolous lawsuits.
Absolutely. I'm glad to see that one go as well. We're talking to Alex Andrade. Alex, hang on for me for just a second. Let me get a quick traffic break in here. Davis Allen with Traffic on the Fives.
Well, right now, not really seeing any delays along Avalon Boulevard north or southbound, so good news there, but we are starting to see delays on Garcon Point Bridge northbound. Once you get through the toll plaza, it'll check in clear at I-10. Also seeing minor delays on Gulf Breeze Parkway going eastbound back up around the Bells Winn-Dixie parking lot. Also the front gate of and back gates of NES Pensacola checking in clear. No delays on I-10 or I-110. I'm Davis Allen with your Traffic on the Fives.
Thanks so much, Davis. Now back to Representative Alex Andrade. Alex, you know, whenever I have you on, I always talk with you about the bridge because that is the issue for thousands of people in our area. I saw that we've covered up the signage that says tolls. I see that FDOT is adding an extended right turn lane. These are all good, you know, on Avalon onto 98. These are all good things. Do you have any update for us on, and I mean, I hate to ask because what's the point of hearing a date that you don't believe in, but do we have any expectation on what's going on with the bridge repair?
Yeah, so I spoke with Secretary Gaynor last week. They're 2 weeks behind on turning over the report to me and publicizing exactly what their understanding of everything is. However, I've been reassured strongly that the DOT secretary believes strongly that after reviewing the report, reviewing all the information, Memorial Day should be the day for reopening. And they're doing their best now to come up with the best way to convey as much comfort as possible to the public. Although, as we discussed a couple weeks ago, I won't blame the public for not taking anyone's word on it. It's really, we're at a point where it's a more show, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
I keep getting reassured the Memorial Day, you know, is the target. So,
And that's for full four lanes, right? That's for full reopening. Is that right?
I'm not gonna say two or four. I'm just gonna say reopen by Memorial Day. At this point,
something is far better than nothing. I suppose that's fair. Now, Senator Brox, when I talked to him on Friday, he indicated that he has actually stopped participating in the FDOT calls, and he wants to go inspect the bridge this week and talk directly to the people responsible. Are you going to be involved in that? Is that even going to happen? Do you know?
I don't know if that'll happen or not. My last day in Tallahassee this week will be Thursday, because Friday's Good Friday.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'll have the time to tour the bridge, you know, with everything going on in Tallahassee. But, I've spoken with, again, representatives from DOT. I've spoken with representatives from Skanska. I'm confident that, you know, Memorial Day will be the day, but I really can't blame anybody for not taking my word for it.
I understand. I do. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2, southern half of Escambia County, Gulf Breeze, and the beach. Alex, thanks for the time. Keep up the good work in Tallahassee, and we'll look forward to talking again next Monday.
Thanks, Andrew.
You bet. 6:49 on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Well, speaking of that bridge, speaking of Avalon, speaking of the long commute that people on the beach or in Gulf Breeze or in Pensacola heading the other direction have to endure every day. Here's the thing. As your car gets older, you know, you go from loving it to liking it to feeling kind of ambivalent about it, and then you start to get into degrees of enduring it, right? And then eventually you're tolerating it, and at some point you become intolerant toward that old car and you get a new one. New used one, whatever. Depending on where you were on that scale 6 months ago before Sally, you may have thought, well, 20 minutes in this car is no big deal every day each way, but now an hour and a half each way, and you're thinking, oh, good Lord, this car. Well, go to Frontier Motors. Find out what kind of cars they might have, or trucks, or vans, whatever, that might make the commute a little bit less painful, a little bit more enjoyable, a car that you look forward to getting into every day instead of dreading that you have to get into that car, and maybe save money, right? Because you're not putting that $500 every 6 months or $1,000 or $1,500, you know, the big repair that you have to, do I, don't I, sell it, what do I do? Just get a nice car that's going to run all the time and you're going to enjoy. Frontier Motors specializes in 1-, 2-, 3-year-old, low-mileage, great-condition used cars, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Behind that Buffalo on Beverly Parkway, be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi. 55! National average for gallon gas, 286. Florida average is 287. Bridgeport, California has 519. Louisville, Texas has 217. Here locally in Navarre, 278 east and at the Walmart, 275 west of the Walmart, 287 up 87. 281 in at the foot of the Garcon Point Bridge, right across the road on the south side there. If you're in Milton this morning, 286 at the Raceway, 289 down Avalon, 285 at the Walmart in Pea Ridge, 287 at both stations in Pace, 259 at the south side of 9 Mile at the Walmart, 256 on US 29 at the Murphy Station in front of the Walmart there. And coming in from the southwest side, looks like 270 at the Navy Exchange and 279 at the TNC. Let's get Allison Bennett in here real quick. You called in about the Georgia voting bill. Is that right, Allison?
Yes, good morning. As a former elected official, I served on the city council in Haines City, Florida from 84 to 87. I can't tell you how disappointed I am in the governor. Not to be able to give somebody a bottle of water makes it no different with the Republican or Democrat. If someone is thirsty or dehydrated,
Hold on. I actually read the bill, and the reports that you can't give somebody water are false. It says that what it says is you can't give them food and drink if you're not a poll official. But poll officials are specifically protected in providing drink stations for water for people in line. So that one slice of it has not been accurately reported. It specifically protects them in providing drink stations.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
But that's wonderful. People should have a right to vote.
Absolutely. And the bit about food and drink, Allison, thanks for the call. The bit about food and drink is all in the context of electioneering and influence and basically donations and bribes. That's kind of the context of it. But yeah, that report that you cannot give water is false, except it does. I mean, it specifically protects the right of people who are the officials to provide drink stations for the people waiting in line. Mark Jacobs is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Mark? All right, we'll get to him in just a minute. Let's check Davis Allen now with a quick shot of sports.
Well, the Elite Eight, it's all set, and those teams that are going to be playing in the Elite Eight starting today, you have UCLA, Arkansas, USC, Gonzaga, Houston, Michigan, Baylor, and Oregon State are the eight teams that are going to be represented in the Elite Eight. The games that are getting underway today, we are going to be seeing, hold on, let me get my thing, Oregon State at Houston, and that's going to be at 6:15 on CBS, and then that's number 12 against number 2, and then number 3 against number 1, Arkansas versus Baylor, also on CBS. That'll be at 9 o'clock. I'm Davis Allen with your quick shot.
Zaga is my only hope left.
But I have them winning.
But
so
I had them losing to the Illini, so, you know, so goes it. All right, we're going to try Mark Jacobs in the newsroom again here. Mark?
Testing 1, 2, 3.
Yeah,
we got
there.
You. There we are.
Opening statement starting soon in the trial of Derek Chauvin, former Minneapolis police officer accused of killing George Floyd. Floyd's brother telling the Today Show his family thinks it's a slam dunk.
We know the video is the proof. That's all you need. The guy was kneeling on my brother's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. A guy who was sworn in to protect. He killed my brother in broad daylight. That was a modern day lynching.
Floyd's death, of course, triggering a wave of outrage and protests around the country. At least 4 people dead after historic rains sent floodwaters sweeping across Nashville over the weekend. Swiftwater rescue crews pulling more than 130 people from cars, apartments, and homes. And that massive container ship that's been blocking the Suez Canal is just about free. The Ever Given has been lodged in one of the world's most important shipping channels for nearly a week now. Still unclear just how long it'll be till the ship is moved or when other vessels can start using the waterway again, costing about $10 billion a day in shipping.
Might be a future news question here in a moment. Mark, thanks so much for the update. Davis Allen with traffic on the fives.
Going northbound on Garcon Point Bridge is pretty slow moving until you get through the toll plaza. Once you get on Avalon, it does check in clear, and Avalon stays clear, actually, as you're going southbound all the way through Garcon until you're met with some minor delays right before you get on to land in Gulf Breeze. We are starting to see some buildup over there. Still no delays at the front gate of NAS Pensacola now. Good news there. I-10, I-110 checking in clear. Also, no delays along Blue Angel Parkway and Gulf Beach Highway. I'm Davis Allen with your traffic on the fives.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Future news. Davis and I tell you what's going to happen before we know anything. Well, we know some things. We can read the tea leaves. When will the Ever Given be freed out of the Suez Canal?
I think in a couple of days.
I think it's going to be today. I think it's going to be today or tomorrow at the latest. That'd be one week in. When will Cervantes be done? Now that they're starting to work on the road diet and the restriping and the crosswalks and the lights and all that kind of stuff.
I'll give it 2 weeks.
Oh, I think it'll be a little long. Well, I don't know. I haven't looked at the project time. I'm guessing a couple months, and I think that I'll be happy. The trial of Derek Chauvin, and is he going to get convicted?
Yes.
Yeah, that seems fairly straightforward. I mean, you never know. You got to do the trial. Will HB1, the anti-riot legislation, actually get signed into law by the governor?
It will.
It will. Will the guns in churches that are on schools, HB 259, will that become law?
I think so, yes.
It will. And will the COVID liability, will he sign that?
Yes.
Oh, that's 100%. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Hey, coming up at 8 o'clock this morning, we're going to have a one-hour town hall with our Congressman Matt Gaetz. You can call in 437-1620. That's at 8 this morning.